Tony Podesta was once one of Washington's most influential lobbyists. Like many Beltway operatives banking on Democrats to win the 2016 election, Podesta's political fortunes fell along with Hillary Clinton's campaign. But Tony Podesta's problems went well beyond that. There's the lavish real estate portfolio, the world-class art collection that he billed his own firm $360,000 a year to rent pieces from, and the threats of legal action related to his firm's work with the government of Ukraine. That's all detailed in a profile by Julie Bykowitz and Brody Mullins in the Wall Street Journal. And Julie Bykowitz joins me now from Washington to talk about it. Julie, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You write that Tony Podesta was in line to be king of K Street. His political consulting firm ended 2015 as the third biggest in Washington. He had clients from giant tech companies to Wells Fargo Bank. And just 2 years later, his firm went bankrupt. It's a remarkable fall. Tell us what happened.
Well, we set about answering that question, what happened to Tony Podesta? And at first, it seemed like the answer could be rather simple. He was entangled in this ongoing federal probe of Russia and how it influenced the 2016 presidential election because he had done some work years ago with Paul Manafort, who became Trump's campaign chairman. So Tony Podesta and the Podesta Group, which is his lobbying firm, were in the news quite a bit in the latter part of the 2016 election. And then when Mr. Manafort was indicted this past fall, Tony Podesta's firm was identified in those indictment papers as Company B. But we suspected that the problems ran a bit deeper than just the Mueller investigation. And the reason for that is pretty simple. There's another lobbying firm that was also identified in that same investigation, and that firm is doing just fine. So my reporting partner and I sort of dug into the explosion of the firm, which we found out sort of dated back to 2015 when he started having increasing financial problems and turning to his firm for more and more help with sort of what you would consider to be lavish personal expenses. And as a result, he and his firm were taking on riskier and riskier clients. So the problems just started snowballing from that point. And then in some ways, the Mueller probe really was sort of the match dropped into a situation that was already just sort of primed to explode.
I mean, you write that Podesta's fall was propelled by unexpected blows delivered by fate and made worse by hubris. I mean, you have several examples of that in the piece. I mean, as his firm is collapsing, Podesta's at an art show in Italy. It's just incredible.
Sure. He did quite a bit of international travel. It was, you know, we were able to review some of the calendar records from inside the firm and found that he was away a good bit of 2016 and 2017 as the firm was just having one problem after another. His travel was often linked to work that he was doing, but it really kept him away from some of the, you know, increasing problems that needed to be solved within the firm and really left his staff feeling quite frustrated that they couldn't figure out, you know, where they were going from here. You know, what was the succession plan if Tony was going to be stepping away? He was the sole owner of the firm, and that really was an issue for employees that worked with him because they had tried for years to get him to sell off stakes in the firm just to sort of diversify the ownership in the event that Mr. Podesta, who's 74 years old now, would step away from it.
Julie, talk about hubris. Podesta is an art lover. In fact, his collection has over 1,300 pieces, I understand it, and is valued in the tens of millions of dollars. And as his firm is collapsing, he's, you know, globetrotting, going to art shows and hobnobbing with celebrities. That kind of private art hobby caused some serious problems for his firm, for his business, and cost people their jobs.
It did in some different ways. We were able to find that the firm got entangled in an Internal Revenue Service audit, and the IRS took issue with the way the firm was paying for some of the shipping and handling of Mr. Podesta's personal art. And he also had the firm pay half of the salary of his personal art curator. So art played a role in how his spending went over time and sort of his reliance on the firm to keep generating more and more profits to keep up his art habits.
Back up a bit here, Julie, if you would, and remind us how powerful Tony Podesta once was and how he got to where he was before his quick downfall.
Sure. Well, Tony and his brother John Podesta, who is another familiar name, grew up in Chicago and in a very working class family. And John Podesta and his brother Tony founded what became the Podesta Group lobbying firm in 1987. John Podesta very quickly sort of went into a more political route in taking a job in Bill Clinton's White House and eventually rising to become President Clinton's chief of staff. Tony Podesta maintained sole ownership of the firm and then went on to really build a very powerful, predominantly Democratic lobbying firm, but diverse in that they had Republican lobbyists as well, and really sort of hit its stride during the Obama administration. It really skyrocketed from about the 20th biggest lobbying firm, judging by domestic lobbying receipts, to the third and fourth largest just in a couple of years' time during the Obama administration. And I think that's a credit to Tony Podesta's ability to develop really long-term relationships with politicians and others in Washington, and also just his status as having instant access to not only John Podesta, his brother, but a whole array of powerful Democrats.
Podesta's rise and fall somewhat mirrors the Democratic parties in recent years in Washington, but you make clear this was broader than merely the fall of political fortunes and Hillary Clinton losing the campaign.
Exactly. There were so many interesting and unique factors here, and we've already talked about Tony Podesta's sort of personal issues as being one of those factors. But another piece of the puzzle was that, again, John Podesta, who had been so instrumental in founding the firm and, you know, keeping Tony Podesta in power in many ways, also became a bit of an issue because during the 2016 election, of course, Mr. Podesta served as Hillary Clinton's campaign chairman.
John Podesta did, yeah.
That's right, and was himself the target of a theft of many thousands of pages of emails that got leaked out. And that sort of became an embarrassment, not just for John Podesta and Hillary Clinton, but also for Tony Podesta, whose own emails were sort of highlighted in the media throughout the latter part of the 2016 campaign. So that was just one more problem that the firm faced, you know, trying to attract and keep corporate clients who really are very hesitant about getting wrapped up in highly political, highly controversial news headlines. Is not great optics for the firm.
So the firm at first had close ties to the Democratic Party, but you report, you know, as things started falling apart, he sort of wanted anybody as a client, and he was hired by former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and his deputy Rick Gates to lobby on behalf of a nonprofit connected to the government of Ukraine. Manafort and Gates have been indicted by the special counsel investigating Russian interference in the U.S. election. How does Podesta fit into that? Has he been implicated in this investigation?
From what we can tell, many members of his firm have been speaking with the special prosecutor. The firm and those lobbyists have been subpoenaed for information. Mm-hmm. There's no charges at this point against Tony Podesta or anyone else at the Podesta Group, but it's fair to say that Mr. Mueller's investigation is not over. It's an ongoing probe, and one sort of key piece of that is that Rick Gates, an associate of Paul Manafort's, who was not only working with Mr. Manafort on the Trump campaign, but also working with Mr. Manafort on this Ukraine work in 2012 to 2014, has pleaded guilty and will be highly cooperative with prosecutors.
You talked to a lot of former employees of the Podesta Group. Are they angry, frustrated with Tony?
I think some of that does come through in the piece. There was a frustration among employees that they felt that they couldn't get him to pay attention to the dire straits that the firm was in until it was too late. So I think frustration would be probably the best way to describe the employees and how they felt, especially in those last couple of weeks of the firm.
Julie Bykowitz is a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. We'll link to you to her story about the fall of Tony Podesta, which she wrote with her colleague Brody Mullins at hereandnow.org. Julie, thank you.
Thank you.